Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the talk. It's about how many PhDs does it take? Okay. Good. Okay. Tri-State Recommendations. Tri-State Fertilizer Recommendations for Corn, Soybeans, Wheat, and Alfalfa. Originally published in 1995. This was an industry, I wasn't around for the work, but an industry-led effort trying to unify recommendations, and especially in northwestern Ohio, between the three states. It's really served as kind of a cornerstone of how we think about fertility, how we manage nutrients. Of course, Ohio being a field crop-dominated state, that has trickle-down effects to other crops that we also grow. So, 1995, it's been 22 years plus. Farming has changed in 20 years, right? I ask farmers, has anything changed in 20 years? And they say, of course. You know, we've got increased yields. We've got much greater rates of conservation tillage. 95, you know, we think about the adoption of transgenic crops at that time, reduced rotations with that, and then always an onslaught of new pests and diseases coming up. So in Ohio, as you may or may not know, we are very focused on water quality at the point. The good news is that our rivers aren't on fire. The bad news is that Lake Erie turns bright green from time to time, and so we're really working hard to eliminate that or reduce that to the extent possible. So it's really kind of this idea of improving water quality, reducing nutrient runoff, that's really helped kind of justify and codify what we're trying to do here. Okay. So in a very generic sense, the research question that I'm asking and addressing with this talk is at what soil tests and tissue test levels are we likely to see yield responses? Okay, so this is, and specifically with P and K fertilizer, so this is an issue farmers want to know when they need to pull the trigger, when they should apply and when they shouldn't, right? And so historically we've based this, and it still is today until we do any kind of revision on tissue test P and tissue test, soil test P and soil test K. So I am not a classically trained soil fertility specialist, so I really had no idea how to do this. But one place to start, I know that old data is still good data, and so I was fortunate enough to have my predecessor's predecessor, who worked on an annual report that he put together, Jay Johnson put together every single year. And we went back and just kind of painstakingly mined that data, looked in terms of P and K trials, what was there. And it's very difficult, I'm sure, for you all in the back to see, but basically we've got the vast majority of those trials came from just 9 sites. And of those 9 sites, roughly 70-75% came from one site. And those are on OSU research farms, right? So we have a situation where we've got 20 years of data, 30 years of data going into recommendations on a few locations. That's just the Ohio piece of the tri-state. Of course, there was data that came from Michigan and data that came from Indiana as well. But those data are very hard to come by. They don't exist. There's not a lot of actual data presented in the recommendations itself. So it's just kind of like this institutional knowledge that it's hard to really fact check from a kind of a rigorous scientific perspective, right? So I just showed this graph. We went through and we calculated relative yield for soil test P and soil test K. It's shockingly clean for what I was expecting to find. We see on the left is soil test phosphorus with the red line indicating 15 part per million Bray phosphorus. That is our critical level as defined by the tri-state recommendations. Potassium, on the other hand, is binned by cation exchange capacity in our recommendations. Majority of soils falling somewhere between 10 and 20 cation CEC. And so at that level, it'd be 100 part per million of ammonium acetate extraction. So this is really the Ohio piece, right? It's not the whole piece, but it's the Ohio piece of the data that went into the Tri-State Rex. And it's an interesting academic exercise. It's good to see that there was a lot of validity in terms of defining those critical levels, right? But from our perspective, you know, we kind of generated this and said, okay, we can share this with the public for the first time now that the recommendations have been out for 20-odd years. So what were we trying to do? Well, generally, the recommendations, we're working on NPK and a little bit of sulfur work. We're just limiting it to corn, soybeans, and wheat. We're not doing work in alfalfa. So again, this is going to be an on-farm trial. We're going to talk about some data that we collected on farms. So there's justification in doing on-farm research for a lot of reasons. It's a bit of a necessity for us. You know, we didn't have the luxury of waiting around 20 years to collect data on research farms. So trying to get as much site years as we could in that amount of time, and then just in a few years, is really what we're after. And I think it's important, you know, just this idea of trying to get grower buy-in and trying to engage with growers and leaders in the community in terms of who's making management nutrient decisions. So that was like an important piece. So we've really strived to just try to blanket the state and get a diversity of soil types. And we do this by working directly with crop consultants, directly with OSU Extension County educators. And they help kind of facilitate trials, and the U.S. Postal Service is very important for this process, okay? We've been very flexible in terms of what we're requiring farmers. We make suggestions, but in terms of the rate, source, timing, and placement of that nutrient, it's really up to them. I put it in their court and just say, this is a trial for information for you. It's going to be hopefully be valuable for you, so you just pick what you do and continue to do it. Or if you've got something you want to test, let's look at that. So what does it mean? On-farm trial across the state, it's noisy data, right? I mean, we know that it's going to be noisy by nature. All trials are replicated, randomized, minimum three times. For the P and K piece, there's no rate component. It's just fertilized versus not. So that's what we've done. Fertilized versus check plots. Sometimes we have P in addition to, sometimes we're running a trial that's just phosphorus. Sometimes it's phosphorus and potassium in there. Okay. So the approach is to sample an 8-inch sample, 0-20 centimeter sample ahead of the fertilization event. We take R1 samples for nutrient concentration. So that's at, of course, it's silking for corn and at first flower, initial flower for soybean, flag leaf for wheat. And then we're measuring grain yields and the nutrient concentration. So we've got a good amount of data in addition to management surveys that really detail what that field is seeing. So, you know, every little field here has a unique story, right? And when we try to compile this, it's really difficult to kind of keep those details in check. Impossible, you might say, but we try to capture that if we want to go back and mine it to the extent that we can. Excuse me. We started in 2014 this process, and this is a kind of our final year for this right now. You can see the numbers in terms of how many trials we have. We're at a little over a couple hundred total sites or site years in terms of what we've done, but a little bit more than 100 for phosphorus and a little less than 100 for potassium, assuming that the trials we have out now are all coming back with good quality data, right? So we don't like to count our chickens before they hatch. So 33 of the 88 counties represented, so we're very happy with the buy-in that we've gotten, the distribution, and across the state. So but there's a problem. There's a problem because we pleaded and asked and begged for sites that had low soil test phosphorus and low soil test potassium. But what did we get? Did we get sites that had low soil test P and low soil test K? No, we got growers that wanted to work with us that were good, very good managers, right? And they are on top of their fertility program, or maybe a little bit too on top of their fertility program, and they, you know, these weren't fields that hadn't seen lime or potash in 10 years, right? These are So you can see the mean, the median, and the range here in terms of the pHs that we were working with. But really, the two figures are showing the distribution of soil test phosphorus with a small dot dash red line for the critical level is for both sites. So we can see that the majority of those sites fell well above the critical level. Okay, and that's just the reality of what we got. So, and this is, you know, this is, well, I will ask the audience, are we expecting a lot of responses to fertilizer when the majority of our sites are over the critical level? Thank you, thank you. We've got one brave soul in the audience. Yes, the answer is no. You get 100%, John. All right, so our Kate Nelson of looking at relative yield versus soil test P, relative yield versus soil test K. It's an incredibly boring story. Now is the time for you to nod your head and take a nap, because it's not, you know, it's not what we were initially hoping for in terms of the spread of data, but we do have a lot of representation. And you can see that this isn't all the data that's graphed, but it's entirely on farm what we have here. So very few responses. Trying to get that critical level established is going to be difficult with these data alone. All right. We can look at the same thing for R1 tissue, P and K. Noisy data, big spread. The dashed are what is defined in tri-states as the sufficiency levels for that. So again, a lot of variability in terms of the values that we're looking at. And I will say that we have recently are in the process of publishing long-term data from, it's longer-term, P and K trials that I'm not going to talk about now in this data, three sites. And the trends that we see here are three rates of P and K, corn and soybean rotation. After 9 years, we saw very few instances of actual response to grain yield response to P and K fertilization, despite the fact that we started in the maintenance range, that kind of quote-unquote sweet spot that we are recommending producers. So, and for the I'll just show this a little bit of grain nutrient removal data, showing that, and this is work that I just saw came out of Illinois as well, that confirming some of this, that basically we're looking at P205 and K2O, and I apologize for the English units, but pounds per bushel, you know, pounds of that nutrient per bushel of grain removed. The current, the tri-state data for corn, 0.37, 0.27 for corn, we can see that essentially as yields increase, crops are doing more with less. That nutrient is getting diluted down with presumably increased carbohydrate in the grain. So to summarize, how are we doing on time? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very few grain yield responses to P and K fertilizer across these sites. It's likely that R1 tissue sufficiency levels need to be adjusted based on the data that we're getting. As I just mentioned, the grain removal rates are a bit lower, so those need to get adjusted. And then I will say that the data that we have here and then some of the other data I just alluded to from our longer-term P and K on-station trials shows very little evidence, essentially, that our tri-state recommendations are too low, okay? We can confidently, I think looking at that, we can say with reasonable confidence that they don't need to be increased. Are we going to be able, with these data alone, just to kind of dial that in and say and answer the question, do they need to be lowered? I'm not sure we can do that at this point. But at least we know when we don't need to apply, right? When there's a low probability of response. So just in general, in terms of the project, in 2017, we're going to incorporate this data. We're going to incorporate it with a three-stage. We're going to revise it continue as a tri-state document. And then my hope is that, you know, bringing the data with as much transparency while protecting grower identity as we can, it's going to hopefully provide confidence. Okay, so I'll leave it at that. Thank you for your time, and I don't know if we have any time for questions, but I got it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. So time for questions.
Yes. What percentage of your farmers that you talk with soil test on a regular basis?
What percentage of farmers that I deal with soil test regularly? I would say that the vast majority of them do. It's rare to find. I ask that question a lot. How many people have had their soils tested in the last 3 or 4 years? When you get commonly, you know, vast majority of people in that room raise their hand. So we have excellent laboratory capacity in Ohio for plant and soil analysis. Yep. A lot of good resources to work with. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The question is why did we not conduct rate studies and just these binary plus? The answer is because if we would have conducted a rate study at every single one of these sites, right, it just would have been additional work and additional analysis that would that have bared any fruit if we don't see any response at all?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to have that many sites. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the costing one, we don't get funding for this kind of work. I mean, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good point. You know, it's limited in terms of what that particular question is asking, but we do have some multi-rate sites on our own farm, but asking that from growers, especially over a sustained period of time, is probably a little bit too big of an ask. And without, I mean, maybe a few growers, but yeah.
All right, great. I think we have to stop.
All right, thank you.